Hello and welcome to Ordinary, a podcast that aims to help Christians live for Christ in everyday life. My name is Josh Bannister, and each week I sit down with a couple of UK pastors, Graham Nichols and Mark Bentham. In today's episode, we talk about the problem of pornography in the context of last Sunday's sermon on Matthew 5:27, a passage about adultery and divorce. We reflect on those themes as well in the Sunday roundup, but before that, a bit of lunch talk and some news. See you on the other side.
I am recording in all media, in all places, all over the world.
So am I.
My name is Graham Nichols.
Okay, I'm recording now. Sorry.
My name is Graham Nichols.
No, you've got to do it with the same energy. I'm sorry if I drained your spirit there.
Give me my some name energy. Is Graham Nichols.
Yeah.
And I'm Mark Fentham.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm Josh Bannister. And you're listening to Ordinary. Thank you. That was nice. I enjoyed that. We should have that every week. You're listening to Ordinary. Welcome back to the podcast. Before we started recording, I was just being filled in on people's lunches. And I think we should just let the people know that Mark's had a delicious bacon and avocado sandwich.
Yum.
And he's...
And an apple.
He's going to have an apple.
I've had the apple as well.
Oh, he's had his apple
exactly.
That'll keep the doctor away. And yep. Graham's had several different types of cheese, and he's pretending that is a sustainable and healthy lunch.
No, it was very healthy because it was one kind of cheese, actually, Blue Stilton, a big chunk that we had left. I could call it leftover, but other people might just call it a supply that was available. But I felt like it needed eating up today.
No nutrients. Is that how you decide what to eat? What needs eating? You're like a sort of human bin.
Yeah, something like that. I also base it on how much requires the least amount of preparation.
Really?
Yeah. So if there's something sort of prepared, a bit of leftovers, doesn't involve any labour, that's my ideal. Like I put some toast in today, but that's like work, isn't it?
Yeah. Did you butter the toast?
I did, yeah, because nice. I like buttered toast. Butter is my thing.
Yeah. Okay, well, listen, I hope that you just have some vegetables for dinner. Okay,
I'm going to have an apple when we finish this podcast. That will be my joy to do that.
Okay, looking forward to that. I'd like some photo evidence because I'm sceptical. Okay, let's have we're going to actually start with the news. We usually go for a little Sunday roundup, but it's going to make sense in the context of the podcast, what we're talking about in our main section, that we start with news today. So let's play the jingle.
Time for news now. Give us your views.
So in the headlines this week, we have talk about what we're going to be allowed to do as summer approaches, whether we're going to be allowed to go abroad. There's going to be countries that we're probably not allowed to go to, maybe countries that we are. What are your thoughts, guys, on that and how people are feeling about those potential freedoms and restrictions coming towards the summer holidays?
Yeah, I think it's, it's a classic, isn't it? As an island nation, lots of us like foreign holidays, try and get to the sun. And I guess there's, just trying to work out the complexity of that, what that will look like. Even if the countries are green, will they suddenly change to orange and there's the mad dash back? Will you have to have jabs to go? Will you have to have a test to come back? Is it worth it? And I guess in as well, is it just a sense of patience and saying, okay, another year and then we can go back to a bit more normality next year? Do you go for it? I think just raising lots of, whether it's worth it, questions in my mind at the moment.
Mm-hmm. There's the wisdom questions, but there's also the sort of, it's what's happened with COVID is a whole load of kind of moral lurches in different directions. So there's a group of people that kind of think a holiday is their moral right. And then there's another group of people, this is outside of the church, who are saying, this is terrible. You shouldn't be asking for a holiday when there's still people dying in India or whatever. This is so trivial. And I think, I know it sounds rather cliched, but you've got to navigate somewhere in between, that you're recognising God's goodness. There are lots of things we can enjoy. Some of them are holidays, all kinds of other luxuries. But there is a degree of wisdom in not attaching all our hopes on them, and also not being kind of self-indulgent or insensitive in our overuse of them.
I think there is the wisdom issues that will come into play, but I think there is also a question of whether Is this a necessity that's actually just going to aid back a knockdown, knock back the kind of recovery on our country, but other countries as well, if we suddenly all start travelling around Europe this summer, that I think needs working out. And I haven't made up decision in that sense of not like coming from any, as someone who's keen to find the sun.
I think it's hard to judge, what the effect is. You can make a personal judgment about what's the risks to me, but I think it's harder to judge what's the kind of bigger effect.
Which is where I think we've...
And I think we need to give people freedom. Sorry, Mark.
No, go on.
Give people freedom, with making those judgments. I mean, last year we managed to get to France, which was ridiculous in the sort of context of lockdowns kind of either side of the summer holidays. But we made it because there was a small slice of a couple of weeks where it was kind of open. And lots of other people didn't make it. I don't think we were entitled to do that, but I also don't think we should feel guilty that we managed to do it. And I think we should be kind of fairly relaxed, hold on to these things fairly loosely. But like any sort of luxury we have, because you're right, it's not a necessity. Like any luxury we have, we use it carefully, but we do give thanks to God for it and enjoy it if we can. Mm-hmm. Otherwise you'd say, well, holidays are not a necessity at any time, anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Sunday roundup show, did the sermon pass real slow? Did you plant some seed to grow? It's roundup time, what do you know?
So this Sunday at Christchurch, we had the continuation of the series in Matthew. This week we were looking at like verse 27 on to around, I don't know, what is it?
37. Mark,
Graham, 37, which is a section on adultery and divorce. And this will lead us into our main section today where we talk about, I suppose, how pornography in our culture is so prevalent and what effect that has on marriages, what effect that has on young people as they... as they're developing and understanding sexuality and relationships. And but we'll start by kind of thinking about what were the main points on Sunday morning, and then that should lead us into that topic in the main section. So, Graham, do you want to kick us off with sort of a summary of Sunday?
Yep. We thought about the general point that Jesus is moving us from the tick box kind of law keeping, where you say, I haven't broken the commandments or some other instructions in the law.
Yeah.
He's taken us from that to the heart. So it's part of that general thing. And he's just illustrating it in a way in this area of divorce and adultery and so on. Mm-hmm. And under that, with that sort of qualification, he looked particularly at how adultery is indeed wrong, but mm-hmm. that lust is also wrong. It's a heart adultery. So we thought about the fact that it was wrong, how it was wrong, and its kind of impact on our culture. And the fact that Jesus says, take radical action. He talks about cutting off hands and feet, but the response is not supposed to be physical, but in terms of sort of spiritual heart surgery. So that was the first bit. And then there was about keeping your promises in marriage, which is really part of the bigger picture of keeping our words generally, keeping all of our vows. So that's a really condensed summary of Sunday morning.
Yeah, that's useful. On the week before, which... I think it was the week before, could have been 2 weeks before, when we were talking about anger.
Yeah.
You I think, spoke about how anger is on the road to murder. I think you said something like that, right? So it's like it's on the spectrum, as it were. But that there are also distinctions and that they're not one and the same thing. Are you applying that same logic to this Sunday's passage?
Yeah, I think Jesus uses that sort of same terminology about committing murder in your heart, committing adultery in your heart. So he wants to make it clear that it's bad.
Yeah.
And it is a judgeable sin, if you like. So that's why he talks about, you're in danger of hellfire and so on, to make it sort of dramatically clear that it's not nothing. It's not trivial. It doesn't matter because it's just your thought life. But I think by the fact that he's saying it's not adultery, it's not murder, it's committing that thing in your heart, he's making a slight distinction, to make clear, obviously, that the state doesn't get involved with anger, unless it works its way out into violence. Mm-hmm. I think in the same way that adultery is grounds for divorce, I don't think looking lustfully on a woman is grounds for divorce. Mm-hmm. So they're not quite the same in their outcome, but they're still really serious.
Mm-hmm. That's helpful. Okay, well, that leads us quite nicely into our main section, so we'll carry on this conversation on the other side of the main section jingle.
I bet that you thought it was nearly over, but we haven't started yet. It's just like on Sunday you thought we were done, but you still had communion left.
I suppose playing into this whole problem and issue in our culture, in our time, is the insanely easy accessibility of pornography and what that means to the way that I suppose young people think, and not just young people, but I think we are going to think quite a bit about young people, but the way that that informs their understanding of sex and relationships and what that does to people. Graham, I think you wanted to start off by giving us a little bit of context to do with some statistics about maybe prevalence inside, outside of the church, and what that is doing to people and to relationships. Would that be helpful to start there?
Yeah, I think there's been lots of studies, some of them more recently to do with, you know, there was a potential of a law a year or so ago, maybe a little bit longer.
Yes, I remember talking about that.
About the legal age. So verifying people's age so they couldn't watch pornography under a certain age, or, you know, or at least the user of the computer had to have their age verified.
Yeah.
And in that context, a number of surveys were done, basically showing that pornography is, in their expression, in their sort of summary, normalised amongst children from their mid-teen onwards. That doesn't mean to say every single child is watching pornography, but very significant amounts, many more than parents. So there were some surveys where they interviewed children and parents, and then they asked the parents what they thought, you know, their children were watching or not watching. And I think in a third of cases, the parents were wrong, in the wrong direction, as in they thought their kids weren't, and they were. And that was even more prevalent to do with women, girls, that is, you know, that a parent would think the girl's not watching pornography, but they were. And then there was an adult statistic that a third of adults regularly watching pornography. So the statistics are pretty scary if you think it's a bad thing. Obviously, they're not scary if you think it's fine.
Yeah.
But if you think they're a bad thing because of the encouragement to lust and all the other effects, it's a significant problem. And I'm sure, you know, you as a potential parent, you know, me as a parent of grown-up children who may still have issues, but are perhaps not quite at that stage, but of grandchildren. And Mark, I guess with your boys, you know, it's bound to be a topic you kind of think about.
Think about yourself
and the next generation. Sorry, Mark.
No, it's a topic we talk about and, you know, think about as a family. I mean, it's you know, two teenage boys, particularly in our day and age, you know, you've got to be talking about these kind of things with them.
And I suppose as we continue this conversation, one of the things that you mentioned you wanted to do was talk positively around the reasons why that might be a negative thing. I suppose the heart behind that being to bring some clarity to the prohibition so that it's not a sort of arbitrary rule, but it becomes something that we understand and we see the goodness of God in, rather than something that's just a, you know, you're not allowed to do that or whatever. So start taking us down that road.
Well, I mean, I think it's worth just saying that the reason why, because the shift is so big. You know, when we were growing up, or particularly Graham and I, you know, the availability of pornography was just so much harder to get hold of. It was still even culturally not that accepted. You know, it was off. And then you got in the 90s, you know, Friends, you know, series started to kind of talk about pornography in a kind of a positive way, as if like it's a good thing, and you know, you have Monica buying pornography for Chandler as a kind of a love gift, you know, and the shift begins to happen. And then, of course, it becomes much more freely accessible. You know, just to add your stats, I think there was the second biggest provider of pornography had more streaming views than Amazon or Netflix over the last year. So if you're kind of, that's the kind of level. So if the culture is saying this is not just that it's okay, but actually can be a good thing. We were talking in our small group last night, and folks were just, you know, sharing conversations they were having with people in their workplace, you know, where that people were expressing how, yeah, they wouldn't have a problem if their boyfriend or girlfriend was watching porn all the time. It wouldn't be an issue. You know, that's fine, you know, as long as they're not cheating. You know, so where you're working in a culture that where it's not even so much as a taboo subject as it was 25 years ago, 20 years ago, and actually now you're in a, accepted, it's even seen as a good and promoted as a good thing. You know, the strap lines through lockdown and pandemic over the last year, you know, from the pornography companies were, hey, we're with you through this, we're walking with you kind of thing. You know, like it's so encouraged, it's so out there. That actually the message that we have then got to present is not just one that this is negative, but to show actually why God's bigger picture is so much better than even the world's perceived goodness of pornography.
Yeah, and I think it's part of a bigger piece of, because we spent a bit of time on pornography just because it is such a current cultural issue, but Jesus doesn't talk about pornography specifically. He talks about looking lustfully, but you know, it's a kind of special, intense case of that. But actually the whole looking lustfully is, it kind of feeds into that, that if you think looking lustfully is okay, then you're going to think pornography is okay. And because the rest of our culture that's not pornographic, you might say, is still using lustful looks to sell a lot of things.
Yeah.
So a lot of the way companies get us to click through things on articles is through sexualized images. A lot of the way, you know, clothes are sold, loads of things are sold in that way. And the way, you know, a lot of music is produced, the sexual sort of depiction in music videos is part of the whole sell of the whole package. You know, the music might be good as well, but there is a whole kind of sexualization, lust provoking, which kind of makes you watch the song as well as listen to the song. So although pornography is a thing, it's kind of part of a piece with that. It's not like pornography is over here and the rest of culture is fine.
Yeah.
You know, pornography is just a specialisation of that.
And it's worth just, you know, onto that, you know, in that wider, the Christian versions of these things. So there's a kind of, Christians kind of allow themselves a sense of, someone saying, you know, creation appreciation. You know, as you kind of just admire the beauty of the opposite sex, and you just kind of linger in the kind of sense of, you know, appreciating creation, as it were, in that sense, is on that trajectory of lust. You know, like, so it's not becomes as bad as pornography. So we kind of tell ourselves, and this is the very issue that, you know, the Pharisees that Jesus is confronting in Matthew, you know, that externally it doesn't seem as bad. You're not actually watching pornography. You're not watching naked people or any of those kind of things. But you're just on that trajectory where you're allowing, and I think Graham used the phrase on Sunday about training your heart to just, it's that kind of sense. So you're trying to justify looking at others in a way that, hey, it's not that harmful. Yeah. But it's all on that trajectory of feeding the lust and desires and discontentment that then becomes comparisons within relationships. You know, you're looking for the person who's more beautiful or more this.
All right, just to ask a practical question then. Is it possible to admire somebody's beauty without it being a problem? Or must you just avert your eyes from everything you can, you consider to be attractive?
No, it's a good question, and it's a fair distinction. I think there's a big difference upon walking down the road or noticing someone is attractive to suddenly creeping into that sense of appreciation. In other words, that it begins to linger, or you're intentionally going out to appreciate creation in that way, you know, in the sense of you're looking out constantly for the next beautiful person, you know, just to, you're kind of scanning the crowd, where the beautiful ones. That's very different to kind of just walking down the road and someone watches and, you know, you know what I mean? You just, oh, and then you're moving on and you're not kind of thinking about it. It's just that nudging on. We can't avoid thoughts popping in, but I can do something about them in terms of how I linger on them, what I process them, how I allow that to begin the trajectory. And I think this is where we're talking about the heart issues, you know, in the sense of it's that sense of purity that isn't guarded just by putting lots of rules around, which is what the Pharisees wanted to do. Purity is guarded by taking seriously actually those kind of what we train and allow our hearts to think and ponder upon. And of course, if we're allowing ourselves to feed that by intentionally looking, either just looking out for beautiful or going those steps further, pornography, you're just feeding that and fueling that desire, which in ultimately, Jesus is warning, you know, will lead you down that path of adultery, because what happens is you never become satisfied. So you're never satisfied until you go to the nth degree, as it were.
I think we tend to know as well the difference between I might have a conversation with Caroline about someone's, you know, she's a pretty girl, so-and-so or whatever. You just might observe it for a moment, and a private observation that, you know, lasts a long time and looks in the wrong places. You know, they're two quite different things, even though they might be admiring the same beauty.
So they come from a different heart.
We kind of know instinctively, you know, what end of the spectrum we are. Obviously, there's probably a bit of grey area somewhere, but we know whether this is a genuinely innocent conversation, observing what is the case, or whether it is actually a sort of self-indulgent, kind of self-stimulating observation. You know, what we said on Sunday, what I said on Sunday was, you know, we have to confess, we've all made these kind of mistakes. So we're not on this podcast or in preaching saying, yeah, we don't have a problem with this ever. And we're just telling you guys, you need to sort of shape up and sort your lives out. You know, we struggle with it. I think women struggle with it in slightly different ways, but still the struggle is there. As you said just a moment ago, Josh, what we also want to do is encourage the sort of positive reasons, as well as just saying you shouldn't do it, because I think the rest of the Bible tells a pretty good story of positively how good marriage is and sex within marriage is, and positively in the sense of the reasons why it's bad not to. It gives us a pretty good story for that as well.
Yeah, and so like what I want to ask is like So, interesting about the whole idea of something being on the road to something more serious, in quote marks.
Yeah.
Clearly, like, it's just not the case that being angry always leads to murder. That being somebody who regularly watches pornography always leads to adultery. Like, that's just not the case. So the prohibition can't be to do with some sort of, like, the inevitability of the more serious action. So I guess like my question is like, what is the harm? Like, why is this a problem? I think the answer, because it leads to adultery, doesn't always, does it? So that can't be the ultimate why this is wrong and why we have to be so careful.
Yeah.
Because you might say, well, this doesn't seem to be harming anybody, I guess is what I'm getting at. Why is this such a big deal?
Yeah, I think it isn't necessary that you go all the way along the road. So you could say it's on the road to murder, it's on the road to adultery, without saying it is adultery.
Yeah.
And you may never travel all the way down that road. So you're absolutely right. It may not be the same as. But in terms of your heart and the idea in even the Old Testament law, you know, the idea of coveting in the 10th commandment, it's sinning in attaching your heart to something which you may not be able to execute, you know, you may not be able to fulfill, but you have to some degree a desire that might happen in some form. Even when you're watching pornography, you have a kind of sort of vaguely defined desire for something, some sexual satisfaction outside of marriage, which may be expressed in some way or other, but you're kind of stepping out. So there is an attachment to something, even though you can't necessarily get there. But yeah, the answer would not be, it will definitely lead to adultery, so you shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
It's just saying, it's pointing your heart and training your heart in that direction. But I think in the meantime, when you're on that part of the road, not the end of the road, it leads to all kinds of dissatisfaction with your current life, if you're single, dissatisfaction with your spouse, if you're married, dissatisfaction with your own sex life and experiences, general confusion about what is normal and what is real. And actually, particularly with any kind of addiction, if we talk specifically about pornography addiction, it leads to all kinds of behavior which is just not loving towards the people around you, because it's probably deceitful in some way. It's giving a lot of time to something, even potentially money to something, which is damaging. So there's all kinds of wraparound damage that comes with it. I don't know if you want to add anything to that, Mark.
Well, I think just, you know, I absolutely agree. But in the context of Matthew as well, what Matthew is trying to, Jesus, let's be more specific, is showing us is that the end of the day is we need him. You know, so sure. It's kind of you're going back to Matthew 5:1. You know, we're poor in spirit, we're mourning our sin, and actually, what he's doing by showing the heart is that he's challenging the kind of the Pharisees of the day. You know, he says we're to exceed their righteousness. The Pharisees have this kind of external; they're not doing it. Kind of, well, I'm not murdering, I'm not in adultery, therefore I'm righteous. And he's showing actually the seed of those things that are in all of us, that the sin is there, and therefore the need for his righteousness and him to cover us is greater. So in terms of that, that's where that he's showing you the heart. And I think that then plays out pastorally and apologetically, which is actually that we're more alike than we're unalike. So as I talk to someone, as I talk with either the non-believer or even as a fellow believer who's struggling, it's sometimes easy to think, well, actually, you know, the person who has murdered, I have nothing in connection with them. And Jesus is saying, actually, no, you do, because you may not have murdered someone, but you've been angry. You have an understanding. You're more alike than you're unalike. And that helps me when I'm talking evangelistically with people, because actually sometimes we give the impression that, hey, we've got it sorted, we're with Christ. And actually what we're saying is, no, we've understood. We're wrestling with the same issues. You know, I do get angry, you know, lust and lies and oaths and all of those kind of things. And actually, even if I haven't gone down the same distance they have, or the same road, as it were, I can still express the sense of, no, but I understand, we're in this together. And I think that kind of just helps us in terms of talking with one another with a greater sense of humility, but also with a greater sense of love, because we are more alike than we're unalike. And I think that's where it kind of begins to cash out a bit as well.
Yeah. Were you going to say something, Graham? I was only going to say, it reminds me of that quote that we talked about once before. I think to do with, I'm going to mangle it, but it was something like, there's no crime of which I can conceive that I myself could not have committed. It's almost like if you just replace the word crime with sin, I suppose it's exactly the same sentiment, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think as well, because there's nothing that God... It's really interesting that the 10th commandment exists at all, if you think about it. You know, the other commandments seem to have a sort of, you know, an effect directly on God if we don't worship him, or an effect on our neighbour. Coveting doesn't seem like it affects anybody. You could say, well, coveting my neighbour's wife, sheep, whatever, is not actually harming anybody. But it's right there in the Old Testament that it's the seed of, you know, discontent, disharmony, a lack of trust in God's provision, and probably will work its way out in some way or other, whether it's just in kind of low level resentment, or it's actually you end up stealing your neighbor's field or sheep or wife or possessions in some way. And I think in observation of, again, statistics I was talking about on Sunday morning, that actually kind of lust, pornography, that naturally sex outside marriage generally has not led to us being really well-balanced individuals. It's led to us being actually more confused, bearing all kinds of scars through our life from different sort of sexual experiences or things that we've kind of learned only through pornography. And all the kind of stats about mental health, about sexual health, all kinds of stuff that's happening with both younger people and within marriages, all kind of bears out that we're not any better than previous generations by having this kind of sexual freedom that we have now. So I think positively when we're talking to our children, or talking to people who are not Christians or new Christians, you know, of course we've got to say God does not want us have sex outside of marriage, but to positively say he wants us to have sex within marriage, because that's the place that it's safe, happy, not safe in a sort of medical point of view, but safe from the point of view of it's secure. There can be complete giving of the one to the other, and actually there's a freedom in that commitment which you can't experience outside of that. What you end up experiencing outside of that, because you're stepping outside of God's plan, it's not freedom, it's a kind of slavery to your own desires. It's a confusion between what you're sort of saying with your body and what you're actually committing with your heart, which only tends to lead to discord and disharmony. And the happy place is doing what God wants you to do. I think we sometimes just keep telling our kids, don't do this, rather than both modelling and talking about the fact that God's way is good, is positively good, but also not doing it is negatively bad, not just because God doesn't like it, because in the end you won't like it.
And I think one of the key things when we're talking with our kids is what I was just saying earlier. We talk about it as drawing alongside.
Yeah.
And I think this is where the Matthew 5 passage, the way Jesus talks about it, that seed enables us to do that. Because yeah. The wrestle may not be the same. The wrestle may not be exactly the same worked itself out, but I'm still wrestling with the same issues. And so therefore we walk alongside our kids as those who are fellow sinners and sufferers and saints, not yeah. just as kind of those who have got this all sorted and, hey, guys, you mustn't do this. Because they look up and go, well, it's not an issue for you, is it? You're married. You know, so you're not having to worry about this. Whereas actually, if we're talking about actually, you know, guarding your heart and purity, it is going to always be a battle because of the world we live in. And so, you know, you speak as one who shares with them, but has also got 20 years plus wisdom of living the Christian life. And this is where, you know, Jesus helps me. This is where I've come to know Jesus, his grace and his mercy. This is where he begins to walk with us in this and begin to help show how the Christian life works out in detail and in the knit and grit, much more than kind of walking, you know, above and looking down on.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Ordinary. If you have questions or comments, email on ordinary@cchh.org.uk and come back next week for another brand new episode of Ordinary.